listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We'll start in the NFC, where the LA Rams are on to the Super Bowl after knocking off the one seed, the New Orleans Saints, 26-23 in overtime. RJ, what is the Vegas perspective on what we watched at the Superdome?
Well, I tell you, I think the main conversation, Jonas, off the game was the pass interference.
Agreed.
And I've heard your take on this, and I really disagree with it. So it might be fun to start that way, because I'm sure if, Jonas, if you have this take that many others, 200 stations across the country share. So why don't we start there? You are not very sympathetic to the Saints.
No, I preface it by saying I know that it was a blown call. They didn't make the call on PI. You could have easily made the call there or helmet to helmet. But I think there were multiple opportunities in that game for New Orleans to take control or put the Rams away, and they didn't get it done. To just harp on that one call means you're not assessing the other issues you had all game long.
Yeah, and but under that theory, let's say we found out that one of the referees was on the take, and we have no knowledge of this, and I very much doubt this is the case. But let's assume for this hypothetical, this Crossfire-esque debate, let's assume, in fact,
all right,
we'll put a little music on.
All right.
Let's assume that one of the refs was on the take. Financial compensation. Follow the money. Now, let's say that ref made every call. We examined after with the tape. We found out about it. We examined the game and said the ref made every call fairly except one. There was one call. Now, would the team have a complaint in that case? Or could we say, hey, one call went against you. You could have still won the game. Toughen up, buttercup.
No, they would have a case there, a complaint for sure.
But what's the difference is what you're saying is, hey, as long as you can still win the game, don't let one unfair call be your excuse.
Well, if we go into it with the idea of a ref being on the take, then it changes the whole conversation. We don't know if a ref's on the take. I hope
no,
one
no,
was on the
I don't think one
take.
Is. But effectively for the Saints in this hypothetical to win the game, if an egregious call was made or not made in this case, but there's no real reason, it's just, hey, it was a bad call. But in the other hand, there's a real reason, hey, that ref was on the take. That wouldn't necessarily affect the Saints' ability to win the game in spite of the bad call.
Well,
and what I'm hearing you say is, hey, yes, the Saints had a bad call, but hey, they still could have won the game, so pipe down.
Yeah, they still could have won the game. The complaining afterwards, to just harp on that one moment in a three-hour football game and assume that that's the reason you're not advancing. There, you got the ball first in overtime. You had the ball after that. You had the lead twice in the fourth quarter. You had opportunities early on. I just think you've got to look at it in totality as opposed to that one thing, but it's easier for people to look at that as opposed to the other mistakes throughout.
Yeah, but I think you could say the same thing if the ref was on the take.
I wish he was. It would, you know, easy the show would be today.
Things.
Oh, gosh. I wish.
But also, though, your thought is that in real time, like when you were watching the game in real time, you weren't sure it was a penalty, you said.
If it was more bang-bang than I think people are acknowledging in the moment, because I saw it and I said, wow, that was right about when the ball got there. In real time, for me looking on television, it looked like it could have gone either way. And when there was no penalty called, I said, wow, well, that's a big play, but I understand it. Now you look back at the replay, and we can all look back with hindsight and a replay and say, oh, in slow motion, two penalties should have been called. I think it was more bang-bang in the moment.
So, Fez and Brad, watching the game, did it seem like that it was an obvious penalty in real time?
Yes. And especially with the point of emphasis.
So you're saying Jonas is just wacky.
Jonas is wacky. It's a point of emphasis all year long that the offense gets the advantages and you can't put your hands on a receiver before the ball gets there, even if it's close. I would say, if you ask me what percentage of the time is that yellow canary going to go flying, 95% there.
Wow, this is very rare. Fez is reaching over the table and pressing a button. Oh, Jonas, hey, listen, I can't control Fez. He can bench 200 pounds.
Well, I know he can bench 200 pounds. He's good at gambling. I'm not. So he's got an HD TV, and I have one of the old standard defs. So apparently I didn't see it right.
Brad, what did you say?
I could make a case for the, it's, you know, contact immediately, bang, bang type of play, but not up high, not at the head, which has been a point of emphasis, not only in college, but the NFL. The fact that the contact was really, I mean, there was no deliberate there. It was up high, whether it was helmet to helmet or not. More often than not, we've seen officials err on the cautious side, throw the flag, and then determine later or not if you're going to eject the player or not.
Colin made an interesting point on his show today right here on Fox Sports Radio. That's where we are, straight out of Vegas. I'm RJ Bell. He said there was a call earlier in the game that was just as obvious from a certain camera angle that would have allowed the Rams first and goal instead of having to kick a field goal. Can anyone give the best context on when that was? Did you see that, Brad?
Yeah, it was 6 minutes left. It was a third down for the Rams. They're inside their 10-yard line, and I would say a defender grazes Jared Goff's face mask. It's not one of them blatant ones where his head completely turns. It was, you know, I had two fingers on it.
So, in your opinion, not as obvious, even with the camera angle?
Even with the camera angle, it was so slight. I could see how an official would miss that.
So, because it got me thinking, let's assume it weren't so slight and that it was more obvious, but it wasn't called. And it got me thinking, is a call very late in the game, a call that our human chimpanzee brains, right? We want to be above all that, but in some ways we are, in some ways we're not. We can connect it, A, B, C, win, right? Saints get the flag, kneel, kick the extra or kick the field goal. Oh, that's almost automatic. Okay, I can follow that. Kickoff, 28 seconds or whatever. I think they estimated the Rams would have. Probably not going to score. Saints in the Super Bowl. Like, we can make those connections very easily. Whereas what happened in the second quarter or third quarter, you don't know how it would have affected the game. So, but I'm thinking, is that really justified in saying that a really egregious call that you can't necessarily go ABC to the final that you want or that you think would have happened, is it any less important to the game? And what struck me was the distinction I think that matters is, was the call obvious and typically called? Meaning, we can have, if we had a million cameras or even 100 cameras on the field, I'm sure we could see a lot of penalties that are like 100% that's a penalty. But since we're humans, the refs are humans, it wasn't seen, it wasn't called. I think we all kind of accept that as part of the game, any game really. Whereas this is one that most people, Jonas being the, I think it's fair to say, rare exception, thought in it was obvious and typically called. You combine that with the fact that it was so late in the game is why I think it feels more egregious.
And let's talk about why it being very late in the game is so much more important. The Rams' chance of winning this game when they don't call that penalty, about 33%. If they call that penalty, 3%.
Okay, now this is based on in-game batting odds, which is one of your strongest suits, Steve Fazek.
Yeah, so basically,
you agree, you're great at it.
I'm not bad.
I mean, he's like, yes, that is correct. Uh-oh, he's reaching over again.
In all the five boroughs, I'm known. I'm known all over the f***ing world.
So no matter how bad a call you make in the second quarter, it's not going to have these violent changes in win probability like they will with 2 minutes to play.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, right? And it's back to this idea is there's only a couple paths a game can go. So if you dictate an unfair path, it feels more egregious.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So, guys, we've been talking a lot about the NFC Championship game. It is the L.A. Rams on to the Super Bowl after a 26-23 win over the Saints in overtime.
So, Fez, we've already ascertained through your deep expertise that you upgrade the Rams a little bit. They still would be underdogs in a rematch against the Saints if it were in New Orleans. But right now, the Rams considered the better team. But boy, oh boy, it's one of those, if we had come in and said, Gurley's going to have these stats, we would think, Rams are in trouble. So what's with Gurley? And this, we're going to be looking at the early line and the very early Super Bowl preview, but what's with Gurley?
I don't think Gurley's right now.
Oh, boy, that's going out on a limb.
What's amazing is he says he's right, They interview the Rams. They interview Gurley. Oh, I'm fine. I just had an off game. But my teammates had my back. Gurley gets 4 carries for 10 yards, drops a couple passes, including one that's picked off, essentially gets benched for much of the second half, did have a touchdown run, was on the field for less than half of the time. And his replacement, C.J. Anderson, who has been doing great, looked explosive, did not look explosive, looked average this past Sunday.
So the guy that was on the couch 6 weeks ago,
who weighs 235 pounds.
He looked average.
Looks like he's had too many nachos and Doritos, yes.
So, boy, it just feels like, and listen, I'm not one to talk about, oh, this is unfair. I mean, to me, I kind of figured that out when I was like 8, that the world was unfair. But there are millions and millions and millions of dollars bet on these games. Now, one of the premises, and much of it legal at this point, one of the premises of the injury report way back when was, if we get all the information out there, if it's public knowledge, there can be no inside information, right? The less hidden secret info there is, the less possibility that a Billy Walters type, a huge syndicate, someone that can pay $20,000 to know about an injury and still make money on the game. Well, if everyone knows everything, there is no inside information. What are the odds that the Rams are being 100% forthcoming about the true state of Todd Gurley? Because have we ever seen a top 3 running back? And I would make the case Gurley a few months ago would have been considered the consensus best running back in the NFL. Maybe Zeke would have been in the conversation. I mean, is anyone else even in the conversation?
Not this year. The only other one would be Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah. So he was on the couch. Maybe, I guess, yeah, another one on the couch. But the fact of the matter is, have we ever seen within the same season, I get the whole rule of 270 and people hit the wall. What was that? Alexander was his name. Shane from the Seattle. He was right. Great. And then the next year he's lumbering around like Franco Harris's last year. But it usually doesn't happen in the middle of a season that you go from, I mean, if I had to characterize Gurley since his problems have started and say, how has Todd Gurley played? If it was a blind resume, we didn't know who this was, you just saw the stats, you'd probably look at the stats and say, this guy probably won't be in the NFL next year.
Well, his stats actually last week were good.
I'm saying if you add up all the, I mean, how many weeks has it been that Gurley, Brad's going to take a gander here. How many weeks has it been that Gurley has seemingly been not himself?
He's been banged up since
week 12.
We don't
know if he's been banged up or not. He wasn't even on the injury report this week. See, your fault. I mean, it's like you're like some drone. It's like saying, yes, master, you guys say that he's 100%. He must be 100%. Oh, he's on the injury. Do you believe all that crap?
I don't believe any of
it. So why are you acting like that he's banged? Who knows what he is?
Well, he sat out week 16 and 17.
Who knows? But apparently he wasn't on the injury report. So do we believe that?
I don't believe
it. I mean, would it be shocking if we found out that some family tragedy was going on that we didn't know? Who knows if this is mental, if this is physical? Who knows what it is? Because even when he was supposedly banged up, when he was on the field, what you said a week or two ago, Fezzik, was, boy, Gurley looks great, but they're not hardly playing him. Remember that?
That was last week.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So why do you say last week like it goes against my point? I'm saying there's been no rhyme or reason to this.
None.
Okay, so let's not act like there is. Brad, what's the number saying?
The number's saying he's relatively inconsistent. I mean, had a 100-yard week last week. Prior to that, sat out a couple games, then had 48 yards, 28 yards, 132.
All right, so if we go 48, 28, miss, 100, and then what was this week?
10.
If you add up those weeks, that guy may not be in the league next year.
That's a replacement level back, and C.J. Anderson is better. Yeah.
So when has Todd Gurley become a replacement level back, and no one can explain it?
Right after that Kansas City win.
I don't know, Jonas. We're going to be down at the Super Bowl. Maybe you should just stand up screaming, we want the truth. You know, like be like a, you can be like a Todd Gurley truther.
Well, especially after he signed that big contract. I mean, he got paid. They paid him like an all-purpose back. And to have 4 rushing attempts in an NFC championship game is bizarre. Like, something doesn't add up.
Straight Outta Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
And we got the AFC up next. Patriots in overtime. Boy, Fez, we had a bet on this, baby. You know? But I'll tell you this. We always and our bet was who would make the Super Bowl for the AFC. We bet this like 10 weeks ago, maybe more. I took Kansas City. You took the Pats. Somehow I was laying three. Somehow I lose. Congratulations. I'll say like that. Now, the scoreboard was a close game. It could have went either way. But the truth of the game was the Pats pretty much dominated.
Yeah, so the Pats absolutely annihilated Kansas City in this game and won in overtime. A big part of the reason they didn't win by more in the scoreboard is the Patriots minus two in turnovers in this game.
All right, and remember, turnovers, if you simply win the turnover battle as a team, you cover the spread 77% of the time in the NFL. So minus two, it's even more than that. So it was quite a statement that the Pats could go on the road. Boy, I never thought about how often you win the game. I can look that up for tomorrow. A little tease ahead, Jonas, is what they call this in the business.
Oh, they do? All right. Let me hear that. Yes.
Okay.
Tease
no big
ahead.
Deal. Got it. No big deal.
Tease ahead. I mean,
you got the look. You got the voice. The mechanics come later.
I know. It's a slow process.
But it's obviously even less likely to win on the road in the NFL when you're minus two in turnovers. So kudos to the Pats. Mahomes, we were saying cold weather, Mahomes struggles. Boy, oh boy, in the first half, I was feeling pretty smart. Second half, not so much. What was your take on the weather effect on the game?
It certainly seemed to impact Mahomes. It was 19 degrees at kickoff, and he was not himself to start the game. Heck, RJ, blink. You go to halftime, Kansas City, 37 total yards. New England had 230 at halftime.
Wowza, wowza. And let's just say it, the genius. I mean, in a league where the draft, whereas back in the day, remember, first-round picks, especially high first-round picks, people were ambivalent about them. They had two minds about them. One, oh, I want to get the best player. Two is those contracts were so player-friendly. I mean, Bradford, remember? It was just ended, that Sam Bradford contract. I mean, he made like, what, $70 million just off of being the first pick in the draft. Remember the famous Bill Parcells was with the Dolphins as GM, I think he was, and said, we might not even take the first pick. We might just pass until we get to the fifth or sixth because we don't want that contract, though they ended up not doing that. But nowadays, the contracts are so attractive. You think about the Eagles. Carson Wentz, because he's still on the rookie deal, allows the Eagles to spend money so many other places. Jared Goff, how do you get Tlaib? How do you get Peters? How do you get Sue, who stepped up yesterday? A lot of it is these rookie deals. So the fact is, if you're the Patriots and you hardly ever have a top pick, you hardly ever have a pick better than 28. And then sometimes you get your pick taken away. Now, some people might say they deserve it. Others might not, in a certain geographic circle around New England, perhaps. But the fact of the matter is, it's so hard to have any real player edge. And especially if you've been good, the gravity is towards bringing you down. And if you're bad, look at the Browns. As much as they've mucked things up, they are one of the most talented teams in the league right now. Because you can't just pick first again and again, have all those cheap deals with elite players. Even if you miss on half of them like they tend to, you're still going to be pretty good. Right? But somehow Belichick keeps them there. And to me, it's a sign of the one truly differentiated thing in the NFL, which is coaching. And I don't think it's a coincidence. The four final teams, the case could be made, had the four best coaches in the NFL. I think unequivocally four of the seven best coaches. Don't even have to debate that one. And boy, when that doesn't go against your salary cap, it seems like, and this is something Mike Lombardi talks about, is the real inefficiency in the NFL is driven by the coaches are only paid. What did we conclude that part that Belichick's getting paid now?
With benefits, $12 million a year.
All right, that's a lot of money. But the average coach gets five. That's $7 million difference. It's $170-some million cap. Even if he improves Belichick the players by 10%, that's worth $17 million. Boy, if I were an owner, figure out who you want as a coach, literally give him $20 million a year, you're probably spending your money wisely.
Absolutely. And look at what New England is doing, that coaching staff, as terms of efficiency. New England averaged 5.6 yards per play. Kansas City in this game was actually better at 6.2. But guess what? New England's time of possession, 44 of the 65 minutes they had the ball, and they out-yarded Kansas City by 234 yards. They just kept picking up first down over and over on third down conversions, 14 out of 19.
And I tell you, that's something you can give. It's a Brady's clutch and all that. Some of it's luck, but boy, they seem to play well, the Pats, when the chips are down.
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.